Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
Working on my biggest project ever for my favorite wrestling event, Halloween Havoc 91. And this year, Wong Elvira is building a chamber of horrors.
Teams and heaps of craze and a man can survive in a race against time.
At Halloween Havoc, anything can happen.
Halloween Havoc 91, Chamber of Horrors, live Sunday, October 27th, only on pay-per-view.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio. And I am joined on this very spooky edition of the program by my co-host, Katrera. What's going on, Katrera?
Not too much. What's going on?
Not too much. And we also have our returning co-host from the past 2 weeks, who's missed the past 2 weeks, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you this evening?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm too bad. Yes. I literally walked in the door 3 minutes ago.
Oh, that's dedication. That's showing your professionalism. I'm very appreciative of that, Craig.
I'm almost winded.
Well, I wouldn't go that far for the show, but you know. But it's been 2 weeks since you've been here, and I know that you're very sad that you missed the Shimmer episode where I talk about my adventures from Shimmer Weekend. So I decided to change. Instead of doing the Halloween Super Show, we've done it all the time, I'm going to let you ask me nothing but Shimmer questions all episode long. So, Craig, go ahead and start. Ask your first Shimmer question.
May I be excused?
No, you have to listen.
Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. It was actually pretty fucking awesome.
That's all I got.
What
else are we talking about?
That was actually one more question than I thought he'd actually have, so I guess I made that pretty good.
Yeah.
But tomorrow is Halloween, and one of the more colorful holidays that we have here in America, and I'm sure around the world. And it's also associated with some of the worst wrestling in the history of the world. And some might say some of the greatest wrestling in the history of the world. And I'm sure we've done this show before, probably a couple times, but it's been a while, so we'll just redo it. You know, when you do 350 episodes, it gets hard to think of new shit. So,
yeah.
Here we go.
It's been 365 days since we've done this topic.
There you go.
I don't even remember doing it last year, but hey, that way we can just redo it. But I guess we can review some of the famous Halloween shows, including the most famous Halloween theme match of all time. I played the commercial earlier from Elvira, the Chamber of Horrors match, and Yeah, what a match that was. It'll go down forever in wrestling history. It's everyone's opinion whether that's good or bad. Probably a little of both. And we're going to discuss some of our favorite monster-themed wrestlers and so forth. But before that, if you guys want to talk about one of your favorite Halloween memories of real life, why don't you guys share that with us? And we'll start with Craig.
Oh, geez, put me on the spot.
Yep.
I remember we didn't celebrate Halloween much when I was a kid. My parents were Christian folk, and, you know, I did trick-or-treating and stuff like that. But I remember one time we had the teenagers from our church over, and it was a Halloween-themed, and so everybody dressed up. Well, I didn't realize everybody was dressing up, and so I think I was probably 13 or 14, and so my dad and mom just figured I would take care of my own costume for whatever reason. And I saw them dressed up and ready to go, and I had nothing. I had no costume. I had nothing picked out. And so, long story short, I ended up in my mother's closet, and I went and drank.
A practice you still practice to this day, right?
Only on weekends.
That's actually kind of funny. I'd actually like to see Craig in drag.
No.
It'd be like,
it'd be like
a bigger version of Mr. Doubtfire or Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hello. Yes.
Katrina, you have any Halloween memories or anything you want to share with us?
No, not really. I really don't. It's not like I have these. Anything sticks out. It's not like a great holiday like Christmas or something like that. And you're, you know, just to go out, you get candy, dressed like an asshole, you know.
I swear, Couture, like every day, no matter what it is just another day for Couture. Like Jesus himself could come back and people go, what are your thoughts when Jesus came back? Oh, it's just another day.
It's cool. I probably wouldn't have heard about it, to be honest.
Well, mine's actually kind of short, but it's one of the most funniest things that I remember from my high school days, and that is just the street I live in. It's kind of like, what do you call those streets that you come, it's a street and it turns into a circle and there's like just the one entrance exit, a cul-de-sac, right?
Okay. Dean.
Okay. Well, not a dead end. It's like a cul-de-sac. Well, my street almost looks like a cul-de-sac, but it's actually like an L. And down the street is this one buddy of mine lived, and he was Italian, and he was this little runt of a kid who his parents were extremely happy that he got to hang out with the football team and was pretty much safe. So they would reward us with these giant Italian dinners where they would have spaghetti, lasagna, Italian sausage, the works, and they would make this for 20, 25 people, like almost every week or every other week or so. But they had one for us for Halloween, and we're there, and there's a couple people dressed in costumes. And my one friend Donald, he's just got like a gorilla mask, which he really didn't need because he's pretty fucking ugly, and he's probably like the saddest dude on the football team, just a real big dude, and he was just dressed all kind of like trashy with the mask on. And so we're just hanging out, you know, drinking some beers and just chilling out. And this, you know, there's trick-or-treaters going up and down the street and shit. And I'll never forget, this one little girl comes walking down the street with her dad. She's actually like across the street, walking down the street. And this girl couldn't have been more than, I don't know, 4, maybe 5 at the most. This is tiny little child in this little princess outfit, cutest little thing. And she's all happy. She's got her big-ass bag of candy, which is almost as big as her. I don't know how she can't carrying it. And she's just the happiest little kid. And my friend Donald, he got my other, the guy whose house we were at, he got his weed whacker and turned it on. and in his fucking gorilla mask and crappy clothes, just turns it on, the full blast, takes off running across the street, screaming his brains at, like, just, you know, like a, like he's a psychopath at this tiny little girl who sees my monster friend, throws her bag of candy high in the air, turns around, screaming out of her mind, tears flying, just running past her dad, just like, just the most horrified child ever. So my buddy, as soon as he sees that, you know, he was a real nice guy, even though he's just always getting in trouble. But he saw the little girl, so he's like, he just throws the weed whacker down, and he throws the mask off, and he just starts running down after this little girl. I'm sorry. Because I'm not really a monster. And the dad is just laughing his ass off. He thought it was the funniest thing. But this little girl running, crying down the street, my big fat friend, almost in tears, running after her, trying to save her. He stopped and picked up all her candy and gave her back all her candy and stuff. But it was just like, I just thought that was the funniest thing. Seeing my friend almost give a little girl a heart attack and his reaction. So that's one of my favorite Halloween stories. But other than that, I guess we could get to the wrestling. Well, if we have any more memories, we can talk about that after the show. But I have brought up, you know, we could talk about some of the wrestling shows from the like the Halloween Havocs that WCW did every year for a few years. And I guess the best one would be to start with the Chamber of Horrors. Does anybody have that on their wiki page or something that we can go over the results of the show?
Okay, it's in the vault. Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us all about the Chamber of Horrors pay-per-view, Cotrera. Was it all? Because all I really remember off the top of my head is the main match. What else happened on this show besides the main event?
Well, the Chamber of Horrors actually started the show. It was they've been promoting this. They didn't even say what the match was. They just said with all the guys that were in it. It was like Sting, the Steiner, and Elegante against the Diamond Stud, Vader, Abdullah, and Cactus Jack. And this, nobody even knew what it, they didn't even say what it was going in. Probably at the time they didn't know what it was, so they started the fucking show to, you know, get the rules down. And I think they used the Thunderdome cage. I don't know if you guys remember from like a couple of years before when they had like the Flair and Sting against Muda and Terry Funk in the electrified cage. They caught on fire. I remember that because Muda put the fire out with his mist and he climbed the cage. And they had the Chamber of Horrors match, they had all these coffins. And the goal was at some point during this match, I don't know why this. They just fight for, I don't know if they had a designated time, but at some point an electric chair was going to come down from the ceiling. And the object was to put one of your opponents in the electric chair and then strap them in and pull the lever and they would get electrocuted.
Now, a second ago, you said there were coffins around the ring. Well, all around this ring were weapons that they could use. You know, they didn't have to just look under the ring or have weapon stations. And in these coffins had these masked wrestlers. I guess, didn't they call them the ghouls or something? I don't know. They were just masked wrestlers. And they were supposed to be like foreign objects themselves and, I guess, attack the wrestlers. But all they did was...
Amazingly, they only attacked the baby faces.
Yeah, and then they pretty much just got their asses kicked the whole time.
Yeah,
so.
it was just like job guys under masks is all it was.
Yeah, they weren't very successful as foreign objects in the match. And basically, you said you had to electrocute the guy. Well, basically, there was a big on the side. One side, there was a giant lever, like you see in the movies when they're going to electrocute the prisoner in jail, and he flipped the lever. And it was a big lever, and that was kind of problematic because the lever was too heavy to withstand its own weight, and it kept coming down.
I remember Texas Jack was climbed the cage, and he was getting ready to pull the lever, and the lever would just fall down, just because it's this flimsy setup. So
it was very shadowy made. Craig could have done a much better job.
Yeah, it fell to the own position, from the off position. So it's,
Craig, me and Couture have been describing the match. Just give us your description of what you remember of this match and this spectacle.
The only thing I remember vividly is Abdullah in the chair and the worst overdramatic overselling of an electrocution I have ever seen in my life. I still remember it to this day. Yeah.
Abdullah actually sold something. So... You never see him stand up, and he sold his gun.
I think it looked so dramatic and overly fake because I think it was a shoot. I think it was the only way to get Abdullah to sell. So they were really electrocuting him, and he was really shaking, and that's why he sold the way he did, because, you know, I think it was a shoot. But basically, the chair was not in the match. The chair was a... And they fought for so long, and then slowly the chair came down. I remember somebody was actually, like, underneath it for a second, acting like they were going to get crushed.
Texas Jack almost got crushed under the chair because he was down on the mat.
Yeah. So then they had to get the guy in the chair. And so basically Rick Steiner ended up getting Abdullah the Butcher into the chair, and he, I guess, got
him in. Into the chair.
Yeah. and then they hit the switch. And, Abdullah the Butcher started shaking violently.
Yeah.
And basically that's how they won the match. All you had to do was electrocute and kill the dude, and you won. So the match was over. But the fun was yet to end, because a bunch of ghouls or just, you know, random jobbers dressed up came to, carry Abdullah to the back, and Abdullah woke up from his electric shock and proceeded to lay waste with Cactus Jack to all these fools that came out to get him. And and I don't think I ever seen Abdullah the Butcher move as fast as when he was beating the shit out of these guys and trying to get the fuck out of
here. These guys came out, they had medical scrub suits on, and they had like white powder in their hair, so every time Abdullah hit them, like, powder went flying. And then they got the cage up, and they were, this was back, you remember when they used the big ramp in WCW back in the day, from the ring to the dressing room?
Yeah.
And this one, and they had the workmen out there that were not part of the match, they were putting the ramp back on there, and Abdullah just stomped one right in the head and crushed his glasses. And I felt so bad for the person, because he didn't know what was coming, and he was horrible looking.
Oh, Lord.
It was so absurd that Texas Jack and Abdullah got juice in the match, and it looked like a little stupid. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looked just absurd to get juice in a match like this, just because of the whole match was so fucking stupid.
And that added to Abdullah getting electrocuted, because he had blood coming between his eyes, down his nose. And
yeah.
And I think he attacked Texas after the match. I recall.
I think he just went local and he attacked Cactus, and then he attacked the guys, but then Cactus jumped in and helped him beat up the guys, is what happened, I think. But it came out that Dusty Rhodes was responsible for the Shockmaster. Did it ever come out who was responsible for the Chamber of Horrors?
I'm pretty sure it was Dusty Rhodes, because he returned as the Booker in 91, so that was his stuff.
Oh, Dusty.
But that's funny. This is one of those things where many times in wrestling when stuff is horrible, it's just so horrible, it's awesome. More times than not. You know, so even though it's really terrible and it's just kind of like an embarrassment to watch, it's really fun. So I can't complain about it.
Yeah, it's going to go down in history as one of the most famous matches of all times. I mean, it might be for the wrong reasons, but, I mean, it's a match that every Halloween we're going to talk about, and just about every other show doing Halloween-themed wrestling shows has to talk about it.
It's funny, too. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they were in there talking to the Steiner brothers about this match and what's going on and how you guys are going to be in it. I would have loved to seen the look on their face. I would have loved to seen Scott's reaction to the whole thing. And then the talk of extra money being thrown their way. Because when you look at all the participants in this match, there's really three that don't fit in. This is not their kind of match. And just
three. Whose match is it?
I don't know. The Diamond Stud and the Steiner Brothers. I just like, wow. You really.
Why was
drew...
Diamond Stud in that? Was there a reason Diamond Stud was in there? Was he a replacement, or was he always scheduled? Because he really was.
It was originally. I know it was originally supposed to be like Barry Windham, but they turned him face and they forgot to take him out of the match, so they had to do an angle before. And where the enforcer slammed the car door in his hand, I don't remember. Know if you guys remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was him. It was originally him, Diamond Stud, Vader, and Oz, Kevin Nash. You remember that gimmick from back then? Or the
match? Yeah.
Capus Jack, for some reason, was on the show, and he was originally supposed to wrestle Bill Kazma on the Halloween Havoc show for some fucking reason. Talk about two matches. I don't know why you would make that match. Bill Kazma and Capus Jack, you know, so.
Oh, well, I'm glad all the pieces fell into place and we got what we got. Because
I remember the week leading up to this, they had Paulie Dangerously and Mizzy High searching for the cage. They got all these tips, and they were running around in all these seedy neighborhoods looking for the cage. I think they got mugged or something, and Paulie hit a guy with a phone or something like that.
But what else? Like I say, you said this started the show, and it's impossible to think that anything could actually follow this. But what actually else was on this show?
Oh, this was when Rick Rude made his debut as the Halloween Phantom against the Z-Man under a mask when he first came to WCW '91. It was an awesome Steve Austin Dustin Rhodes double juice match. I remember one on the show.
Was it an Iron Man match?
No, it was just a. It went to a 20-minute time limit draw for the TV title.
Okay.
Both of them juice and a hell of a match. Remember they were doing this thing. They were experimenting with the referee cam. I don't know if anybody remembers this. Where Patrick had a helmet on his head with a camera, and
yeah,
I watched and watched him make me vomit just because, you know. So damn shaky. I don't know who come up. Well, probably Dusty come up with this. It's still, it's horrible. I don't remember what else. I think Pillman beat Ricky Morton for the light heavyweight title, and they had Luger and Simmons in the main event for two out of three falls for the world title. I think that was about it, pretty much.
Okay. Well, it's funny that. You know, they did everything was so wrong or just bad about, like, the Chamber of Horrors, but they actually did something really right on that show, and that was the introduction of Rick Rude as the Halloween, what was it, the Halloween Horror? What was the name?
Yeah, Halloween Phantom.
The Halloween Phantom.
Which is one of those situations where you see a guy in a mask, and when you see him moving, you know exactly who it is, no mistaking, you know, just by the way they work.
You know,
I could tell you, like, pretty much just almost every mask I've ever seen, I've been able to tell who it was just by the way they worked, if it was somebody, like, notable. You know? Like, fucking Doom.
You know,
I knew who those guys were right off the bat. I mean, you got to be stupid not to.
Yeah. Well, I actually will admit to not realizing that it was Rick Rude right after the bat. And I have a real good track record of also guessing. Like, I knew it was Tom Zink and not Shane Douglas in the one tag match in the cage when they had they were the luchadors. But for some reason, it didn't hit me until he took them out. I mean, I should have known the fucking abs gave it away, but for some reason I didn't snap that it was actually him. Basically, what happened was they were going to have this match, and They gave him like a little bill, but not really a whole lot. And he was wrestling Tom Zink, who would have his flashes here and there, but never really got to like the main event and stuff. And mm-hmm. he was basically a younger version of Rick Martel, basically, the way he looked and his style. And so basically, it's a match with Zink. So I'm thinking it's just basically a squash match, and Zink's going to kind of maybe they're going to start like another little push for him. Or whatever, and then he wrestles the Halloween Phantom, and the Phantom ends up winning and defeating him pretty soundly, and then unmasking as Rick Rude. And I remember that being actually surprised, so I actually got to consider that a success compared to the opening.
At the end of the match, you know, he hits the Rude Awakening, which is the reverse neckbreaker, and Giovanni calls it the Rude Awakening, so right there it's going to tell you who the fucking guy is, you know.
Yeah.
He said and some people use that move, and it's been called the Rude Awakening, so, you know, like, duh. You know,
yeah.
Tell you right there where it is.
And that probably started Rude's best run as an actual worker, as far as his work rate. He was much better than he was in WWE. I think, you know, he was more famous when he was in WWE, but he had a very great run in WCW, and his work rate was at the best. And him and Sting had a long feud, and then the Dangerous Alliance. He had a really good run in WCW until he got injured.
I could never see as a babyface because he's so awesome as a heel. Kind of like a Tully Blanchard or somebody like that, you know. I couldn't see him as a baby face. It'd just be strange.
He's just so obnoxious. I mean, that's what he was. He was better at being obnoxious than being a wrestler, and he was a good wrestler. But he just had that fucking smug fucking look. Everything about him was just you couldn't like the dude at all. And then especially after he hit on Jake's wife and shit, you know. That was pretty
cool. That was some awesome stuff right there. I remember watching that angle.
Yeah.
And he just happens to pick Jake's wife, who looked like something out of a Whitesnake video.
Mm-hmm. Actually, she did.
Yeah, I mean, it is what she looked like. She's a good
little
one
like
from the 80s that looked like Tony Katane from the Whitesnake videos.
She looked like that. Exactly like that. Craig,
she probably had a hard
thought?
Life. Would be married to Jake Roberts. So.
Oh, very.
A blissful woman.
Very. But, Craig, do you remember Rick Rude's debut and your thoughts on his run in WCW at the time?
Yeah, for some reason, I didn't know it was Rick Rude either. I dug that whole angle with him and Jake's wife. Of course, that was in WWE, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in
1988.
What year was that?
88.
Oh, wow. Man. And this was Halloween Havoc 91, is that correct? Or no, it was...
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was 91.
Because he was out of the business. He was in WWF in 1990, and they had a contract thing, and he was out for a year because he still had... like a year left on a WWF contract, so he could go anywhere. So he was out for about a year before he came to WCW. And I remember they did the angle in WWF where Jack Tunney suspended him for life for making fun of first talking bad about the Big Boss Man's mother.
Wow.
Oh, that'll learn you.
Suspended the man for talking about somebody's mom. No, you talk about stupid. That's it right there. That's the man's mother. He got suspended.
Yeah, this was that time of my life when wrestling was not important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be honest, this was, you know, this was 19-year-old Craig who forgot about wrestling for a while and then, you know, went back and watched them later. I didn't see Rick Rude again till probably the time he showed up in ECW.
Oh, yeah, Under the Mask.
Yeah. And there again, Under the Mask, and you could, like you said, you could just totally tell. That's Rick Rude right there.
Also an original member of people who don't remember. one of the original members of the DX.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You remember? He was with Sean and Hunter right at the start when they were doing all that. Then he left and he was on Raw and Nitro the same night. You remember when that happened?
Right.
Yeah.
He left over to the. I think he left because he was pissed off about the Bret Hart thing. That was right after Montreal. And he walked out and went to WCW. This was back when all those guys had those Lloyd's London policies.
Yep.
Insurance policies, and were getting those like $100,000 payoffs, and that's why you didn't see these guys wrestle. Like him
and
Road Warrior Animal. And I think Lloyd's London stopped giving insurance to pro wrestlers after that because they kind of abused the whole thing.
Yeah, well, like Animal did it. Kurt Hennig did it. Who else? This whole shitload of them actually did that. They did basically.
There may be a lot of guys from Minnesota that did this. A lot of guys from Minnesota did this. I don't know what the deal was.
Some kind of scheme they all came
That's
up with.
That's why you didn't see Mr. Perfect wrestle all that time, like when Flair was there and he was the executive consultant, because he had this. He was making a shitload of money off his policy. And eventually came back to the ring, and I think they had to pay off the policy, or WWF paid off the policy or something to get him back in the ring or whatever. But, yeah.
Didn't they all start getting those policies back when I think it was Mary Hart made a bunch of news because she got her legs insured for like $1 million. And then after that, all the celebrities and wrestlers and athletes started getting these Lloyd's of London policies like that. But Mary Hart's basically the one that started it. Like, cause like I say, she got her legs insured for $1 million. That's fucking crazy. What about the rest of her body? What if something just fell and just someone threw acid in her face, but none of the acid got on her legs, which I guess she wouldn't get no money.
Something like that.
I don't remember paying much attention to her legs when I was watching Entertainment Tonight, but I don't know. Maybe something. I don't know what's going on there.
I'd still do her shit.
Good to know, Ed.
Cool. So, were there any other? I know there were more Halloween Havocs, but did they ever have another theme match like that? I mean. So really, the next crazy match that kind of comes to my head, I know it wasn't on Halloween, I'm pretty sure it wasn't Halloween, but the White Castle of Fear, you know?
Oh, yeah, it was the strap match with Sting and Vader. Actually, that's probably the best, greatest strap match I've ever seen, one of the best ones of all time.
They had, like, the commercial where there's, like, some kind of fucking gangster party or whatever, and the little midget Cheatham was involved.
Yeah, well, remember they went to the Rocky Mountains, and the White Castle Fear was supposed to be like this castle that Vader lived in the fucking Rocky Mountains, and went in there in a helicopter, and he challenged him to the match. That's when they were doing those stupid mini movies in WCW. Remember when the boat blew up, when the Master of the Powerbomb tried to kill Sting? And Sting and David Boy Smith from the island playing volleyball with orphans. And then the Masters of the Powerbomb, Sid Vicious and Big Van Vader, showed up. And Cheatham, he put one of those shark fins on so he could go undetected and put a bomb on the boat. And Sting was fixing to go and start the boat, but the bomb was there. And Davey Boy grabbed him out of the way at the same time and saved his life.
Yeah,
there was, and then there was also another crazy, wacky match was the Jake the Snake match, where, you know, Jake had that 2-month run. He was there for like 2 months because he was a little fucked up at the time and got fired. Mm-hmm. But basically, they spun the wheel, and I forgot what it was called, but they spun the wheel.
Spin the wheel, make the deal.
Yeah, spin the wheel, make the deal. What the fuck was it? Clothesliner glove? And basically, Jake pulled out a little snake, and the snake bit him in the face. Or he had to keep putting the snake to his face to try and get it to bite him.
The snake would not attach to his face, so he had to. There's one part where he looks at the snake, and then he just places it back on his face.
These fucking snakes always going into business for themselves, dude. It's like you can't work with them, dude. They don't know. They're
still the greatest of all time was when the snake bit Jake, when Randy Savage got bit by the snake. It was awesome right there. I don't care what anybody did. The snake bit the man on TV.
Yep.
I watched the snake bite the man on the arm. Randy Savage, he's a good soldier for going through some of that shit.
It's going on, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's got to be defanged. And then he starts bleeding. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's fucking real cobra biting him. And then there was also a snake at the Macho Man's wedding. And then there was when the Ultimate Warrior got bitten by the snake a couple times.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. Snakes, they're like fire. It's always something crazy happens.
Jake was just on the Adam Carolla show. It might have been last week, and he was talking about how he's promoting his new documentary that's out. I can't remember the name of it, but basically it's like the life and times of Jake the Snake and and his decline. We'll say the time when he hit rock bottom, and he was talking about having 15 to 20 different snakes, and a handler would always take care of them. And he said that he accidentally killed like numerous snakes, leaving it in the back of his trunk, and he would go into a bar and get jacked up, and come out, and the snake would be frozen to death, and. it was kind of hard to listen to because you know that he was, you know, actually telling the truth for once in his life, you know, because he's you know, he's not jacked up anymore. He's not on the pills and he's not drunk and he's not doing blow. And, oh, it's the Rise and Fall of Jake the Snake, I think is the name of it. Or
what's the Resurrection like or something of Jake the Snake?
Resurrection of Jake Snake. Thank you. Yeah, I heard nothing but good things about that flick. But when you brought this topic up, I kind of misunderstood you. I didn't think we were going to necessarily be talking about matches. I was thinking more along the lines of creepy wrestlers that have come and gone over here.
It was going to be both, so... Obviously,
okay.
That means you have some wrestlers that you've picked out, so why don't you, we'll let you start with those.
Well, the first one that came to mind was Mankind, when he first came in from ECW, of course, Mick Foley, and the creepy promos that he cut about coming in, and then the really... the really crazy organ type music that he came out with to start off with. And then just the whole character in general that he played was pretty creepy to start off with. And it's like, you knew that it was Mick, you knew it was Cactus. And, but at the same time, he was so believable. I remember my little girl was just freaked out by that guy. And when we, you know, went and saw Raw from the front row, she was not having it when he came out. She's like, no, you know, even, you know, Undertaker. That was a feud that they couldn't have set up any better, Cactus and Taker.
Well, when you first saw the Mankind thing, I mean, when you saw the... And you said, oh, what the fuck had they gone and done to Cactus Jack? This stupid shit.
Yeah.
You know? But he made it work. You know, I mean, he had these balls on his, he was legit pulling his hair, fucking hair out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
He was that.
I just remember when I heard the first one, I started marking out big time because I was such a Cactus Jack fan when he was in WCW. And he had gone to ECW for a while, but if you didn't see ECW, he was just kind of out of the picture. And then he's doing this weird different gimmick, but it's just that it's him, and you know that you're going to have a guy who's going to put it all on the line and kill himself in his matches. So I was excited. And like you said, he used to be like, he used to pull out on one side of his hair, he would pull out his hair, and then other times he'd have like it shaved out in like circles around that area. And very early on in one of his first jobber matches, when he was just fighting the jobbers at first, he, of course, his finishing was the Maniple Claw, but there was one match where he stuck his goddamn finger in his nose and pulled out this jam booger, and then he gave the jobber the Maniple Claw. And it was just so disgusting. I remember I almost started gagging just because, giant boogers in this dude's mouth. It was sick, man. I mean, he got into that character.
Where he put the claw on the guy, and he put his fingers so far down his throat, made him vomit. Mm-hmm. We thought that meant a cool angle.
The thing is that the Maniple Claw is actually still being used kind of in Shine. There's this one girl called Sue Young who she does different characters wherever she's at. But in Shine, she's doing this, it's kind of like a cross between the Great Muda and Mankind, where she's got like all this like scary makeup on and she's like all crazy, and she pulls out a dirty bloody sock and puts it on her hand, and then she gives the girls the Maniple Claw and stuff. So he's still being inspired or being like, what do you call it, copied to this day. And it's funny because it's actually a hot chick making herself all ugly and doing that. And she also blows a mist like Muda too, so she's like stealing both their gimmicks. But Cactus is awesome.
That feud started the stretch where we actually got to see some pretty good stuff from The Undertaker at that time, because before that he was just doing the no sell job, facing the Kamalas and the Giant Gonzalez's and the Berserkers and guys like that. And then when Mick Foley came in, they had some awesome matches and finally got kind of brought The Undertaker out of his shell a little bit,
Yeah, I also remember that. I was, even though I was as big a Cactus Jack fan as I was, I still remember being silent and in shock when Cactus won that first the Boiler Room Brawl, because it's like I couldn't believe that The Undertaker lost.
They just had a regular match at King of the Ring that Mankind won the first time. They beat him then he came back and beat him again in the Boiler Room Brawl. And then I think he beat him a third time in the Buried Alive match, possibly. It was a month later.
Undertaker had a big part in getting him over because, like I say, all the other freaks he always beat, basically. I mean, the other time I remember him kind of getting laid out like that, it took like 20 wrestlers to kill him. Including the Great Rumble
when he died at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
McCaskey match.
Yeah. I just remember the Great Kabuki was one of them, and he the Great Kabuki is trying to jump in with everybody else, and Undertaker starts kicking Kabuki's ass.
Kabuki was such a... That was awesome. That was it right there.
Yeah.
People hated that, but I liked it. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. But you mentioned like
WWE and when they did stuff like that, that it looks cool. It didn't look like if WCW is doing it, it looks fucking like hokey and absurd. But I mean, WWF did it. Just it came off like it came off well. I thought, it was dumb.
Yeah, and you had mentioned about like the Ultimate Warrior throwing up. So that kind of is tied into one of the other most spookiest characters in pro wrestling. And, I guess more of a joke character than anything, but who can remember the voodoo master Papa Shango, where he would cause his opponents to have seizures or have black tar pour from the Ultimate Warrior's head, or have him violently throwing up everywhere, or just... he had his, skull that smoked, and then he would shake violently like he was having, something wrong with him when he'd come to the ring, and he had, the skull painted on his face. And, I mean, he sucked as a wrestler, but, I mean, it's one of the most rememberable characters. What do you guys remember from Papa Shango?
Ed, we got a call, so why don't you see what Alex Goff wants?
Oh, goddamn. Oh, he's going to fucking argue about fucking me taking pictures of women's asses. What do you want, Alex?
How about that time Ed dressed up like a journalist and went to a women's wrestling show? How about, come on, I can't. No one's going to laugh at that one. You know what? I actually defended you on that, Ed. I mean, I defended your professional wrestling fandom. So, I mean, I don't know what the big problem with that is.
Didn't he dress up like one
and
go to a UFC show one time?
What's that?
Didn't he dress up like one and go to a UFC show one time?
You know, what's interesting is that he also takes, historically he's taken pictures like that at UFC shows too. I mean, that's kind of what Ed is. And for like, I don't know, maybe people are just now discovering Ed. But as someone who's known Ed, you know, for many years, it's whatever. I guess if people just found out Ed does that, I can understand. But then to lump it in with, like, he's not a – I didn't even want to talk about this, but damn it, since you brought it up, Ed. To say that, like, well, you know, he's questioning his pro wrestling fandom or support of women's wrestling. I mean, it's like all those statements could be true. He could be a pervert, and he could be a fan of women's wrestling, and he could give women's wrestling a huge bump, which I think all three statements are true.
Absolutely.
I have no doubt he's a pervert.
There's one thing you can say about Ed. Ever since I've known him, he's consistent.
Right, absolutely. I mean,
he never
changes. You know? Right, absolutely. I think that's a very fair point. And I don't know, man. You know, like if there was a women, you know, making a big stink about it, you know, and maybe they don't feel like they can. But if someone did, then I think we should have a conversation about it. But I mean, for someone who wasn't even attending the events to say, well, you know, I don't like this, you know, whatever. Then, you know what I mean? Like, then I don't know. Maybe you should say something to the guy. It's not even like Ed's not approachable, right? So if Rob Naylor has a problem with something Ed's doing. I mean, Rob Naylor can just say, hey, Ed, I think it's fucked up, and they can talk about it. Simple, easy peasy, right? But you don't have to make a big public statement. Anyways, but what I called about was that since it's Halloween, let's talk about a famous Halloween tradition of mine is looking at gambling lines. And I saw online, now, we have local gambling here in Nevada, and I saw a line negative 1,500 for Holly Holm against Ronda Rousey. That is incredible, and I'm going to go put money on that because Holly Holm, theoretically, she could beat Ronda Rousey. I mean, Ronda Rousey is not – no person is unbeatable. And I just want to know you guys' thoughts about a line that outrageous. Negative $1,500, negative $1,500 on for Holly Holm.
So what is that, bet 100 and 1,500?
Yeah, bet 100, get 1,500 back. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, who says no to that?
If you even threw down a 20 spot.
Yeah. Yeah, if you threw down a 20.
Yeah, it's one of those where you look at it and you got nothing to lose, but the chances of winning are actually, you know, pretty damn high. But it's one of those where it's like, in case that one time something happened, like, what if, like Rocky, you know, when he got all fucked up because Mickey died. What if Ronda's mom has a seizure or something like that before the fight, and she goes into the fight all fucked up like that? You know, something can happen. You know, she could slip and fall on her head, slip on a pole and fall on her head and get a concussion before the fight. You know what I mean? I mean, something could happen. So, I mean, throwing down $20, $100, it's not like a big loss.
Exactly.
Compared to what the gain would be. But it's still like a long shot. But just in case that long shot paid off, I mean, it's like the biggest payoff you'll ever get as far as a bet like that. So I can see where people would be making that bet. I mean, I'd almost be tempted to do it. I just don't think she's going to have a chance.
Well, there appears to be some cracks in Graceland, right? Because, I mean, recently you've had Ronda's mother come out and criticize Edmund and Edmund's training ability and if he's even a good coach at all. And, you know, Edmund responded to it simply by just saying, you know, people have opinions or whatever. But, listen, I mean, as the hype continues to grow, people around her are going to continue to grow, and different people have different reasons to be around her. And, you know, while she is superior athletics, we've seen people who are superior athletics because of the people that are around them end up bringing them down. And, you know, not, you know, I'm just saying, you know, like everyone has an opportunity to lose no matter how high level you are. And the thing is that, you know, she is high level. She's a high level athlete. And for all intents and purposes, you know, she's going against another high level athlete, Molly Holm. And I saw the stare down yesterday, and Holly is quite a bit taller than Ronda, which I didn't know that before. So, I mean, it's I don't want to build my bona fides here by saying that I think Holly Holm's going to do it. But, I mean, I think that saying that it's negative 15, you know, trying to make a line that large, I mean, I don't – if that's what people are thinking, that there's no shot, I disagree with that. I think there's a – I think that Holly maybe has the best percentage of any of the women to do it.
And one thing that would be in Holly's favor is Ronda, you know, she's had such improvement in her stand-up to where she's also a very stubborn and prideful person to where she can want to go out there and prove a point that she's going to fight this world champion boxer and beat her at her own game and then try and just box her. And if she does that, you know, like you say, against a bigger opponent who's taller and has a bigger reach and can just, you know, is good enough to just jab, 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 jab the whole time and keep away, she could. I mean, you know, Ronda would end up with, if Ronda loses, it's going to be because she beat herself and she played the other Holly's game instead of, like, just grabbing her, taking her down, and submitting her right away. But I could almost see her trying to make a point and playing that game or getting into it, and then, you know, you get into that game for so long, and then you get tired, and then you can't do your game plan, and then you kind of get stuck, and then you end up losing a fight, you really didn't, like, there's no real winner, you know, but I could see Holly, like, outpointing her, you know, if she was to do that.
Hey, and you want to know a secret? You want to know a secret? Here's an exclusive. Ronda gets hit a lot. That's that's something people don't talk about when they talk about her increasing hand speed and accuracy, which are definitely attributes you want to talk about. She gets hit a lot. I mean, you go back and you watch the quick Bechko-Hea fight. She got hit a lot in those exchanges. And really, for, you know, as she gets talked about her striking, and she looks great hitting pads. Her hands have definitely improved. She has a lot of confidence in them. I'm in the belief, though, that it's easy to throw your hands when people are so afraid of your grappling. I think people would much rather engage in that, and they have the grappling in the back of their mind, so maybe their striking isn't the same as if it were with someone else. But she gets hit a lot. If she gets hit against Holly, it may be trouble. And the grappling is a big key to this, right, which is why ultimately I think Ronda will win. I don't think Holly's grappling is nearly ready, or maybe it'll never be ready. But, man, for people just discounting Holly this much, it's almost swayed me the other way, right? I mean, I see people just completely discounting her, and it's almost swayed me to say, you know, maybe Holly has a shot.
Yeah, you know, people didn't think Buster Douglas had a shot, and, you know, he ended up beating the living crap out of fucking Mike Tyson. So, you know, she could take her lightly. Anything can happen in a fight, but I just think it's a long shot because it's a long shot.
Maybe she gets distracted learning her lines from Roadhouse. You never know. Maybe somebody asks her about her boyfriend that day, and he just gets all frazzled, you know.
That's possible as well. Did you listen to that conference call? I've not had a chance.
I just saw the little thing on it on the Daily Update or something like that.
Didn't she hang up when they brought up Travis Brown or something?
Yeah.
There was a long silence from what I understand.
That's another thing that's not helping herself. You know, she's putting herself in a relationship where people are going to give her shit about it. You know, because she's been an anti-Mayweather, and then here she's dating the guy who was supposed to beat up his fucking wife, and I think still married, technically. So she's not, you know, it's just not her mom and trainer. It's herself, too. She's causing drama outside her interpersonal life, and, you know, that can have a major effect.
I necessarily don't agree with that, right? I mean, I think people are people, and people should be allowed to live their life. But the point I will make about it is, listen, if you don't think people are going to ask you about it for exactly the reason why you said, then I mean, you're not, then you need to have different people around you. I mean, listen, if Craig Proper tomorrow started dating a different woman and then he went out and did media and didn't expect to ask what's going on with your wife and what's going on.
That's right.
I mean, you would need different people around you. And I mean, it's easy to say, Rhonda, when this comes up, this is what you say. And come on, you know, I mean, that's the easiest question.
Yeah, but it's also her right not to say anything. So, you know what I mean?
Certainly. But to let it fluster you and to act unprepared,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's not, I mean, it tells you something. Absolutely. She does not have to answer that question. Quite frankly, it has nothing to do leading up to this fight. But,
right.
You know, it's a, and really it's an unsolvable point, right? It's a talking point that can go on forever. Oh, Rhonda doesn't like Mayweather, but likes Travis Brown. Well, you know, those two things can exist, right? She can think Floyd is, you know, disgusting person, and maybe she, you know, doesn't feel the same way about Travis. She knows Travis a little bit more personally. Maybe Travis is not, you know, she knows, like I said, she knows Travis personally. She only sees the Floyd Mayweather character and then his consistent allegations, you know, and maybe she feels differently. She's allowed to do that, you know, but interesting things going into the fight. Now, before I leave, I just want to talk real quick about this Alberto Del Rio situation. How many days, right? You don't have to, some you don't have to answer. How many days, is it going to take for, man, you know, Conan has to be calling Dave Meltzer tonight once he figures out everything that's going on, and he's going to be irate. I mean, what's that conversation going to sound like between Conan and Dave Meltzer? What's that conversation going to sound like?
It'd be a lot of cussing. he won't be able to add the word boom to any of it.
That's true. There's no boom
in
this.
I mean, I don't know if you guys are reading the reports, but Meltzer reported that, I guess, Alberto was getting a million-dollar deal. Now there's reports surfacing online. It wasn't a million-dollar deal. And, oh, by the way, you know, Conan was under the impression that Alberto was going to work a few more house shows. Yeah, that's looking like that's probably not going to happen. And Conan completely have egg on his face with this situation and then with the Mystico situation. I mean, you know, it's interesting. It's just as like a passive observer of Mexican wrestling, which translates to zero. I don't really follow it at all because it's not easily accessible. But, you know, Mystico, Alberto Del Rio, Rey Mysterio on your roster in Mexico, to me, as someone who's just watched pro wrestling for years, sounds like an all-time team you would want to assemble. And then quickly, it's fallen by the wayside as soon as they bring Rey Mysterio on board. So clearly there's some kind of power play. You know, some of the stars don't feel like they're being treated as well as other stars. And, you know, I've not seen that reporting yet. But, I mean, it's kind of clear to me that's almost kind of what's going on, right? For Mystico to immediately jump ship, Alberto Del Rio to immediately immediately I'm saying about a year and a half, right, that Rey's been with AAA. Or has it even been that long?
Yeah, it hasn't been that long. But
yeah,
and
well,
also the
know,
thing is
like,
now that, you know, Ray went because he can work with two real big names, and like I say, they're like the biggest names almost on one company at one time since like the glory years of Lucha Wrestling, and now his main opponents are gone. And, you know, let's say Vince or Hunter calls Ray and says, "Hey, we'll give you a downside or whatever, like Alberto, we'll give you some of those dates. Why don't you come back?" You think he's not going to leave and go back? You're out of your mind. You know what I mean? I mean, AAA, this could be like the – it's funny because AAA looked like they were on a – they were going to get on a good run because of, you know, you had – basically you had Mystices or Mystico. You had Ray. You had Alberto. You had Perro. And Perro unfortunately died. And now you've lost
Mystico. I forgot about
Mystico.
Perro, but that's a great point. Yeah,
and then you know you lose Mystico, and now you lose Alberto, and there's and even if Ray doesn't leave, there's no guarantee he's not going to blow out his knee tomorrow. You know what I mean? He's been the walking wounded for ever. You know what I mean? So AAA could be back to where their biggest star is what, Brian Cage, I guess. I don't know. They could. This could be like a instead of being a big boom period for them, they're looking like they could be into a big, what do you call it, the reverse of a boom period. You know what I mean?
A drought.
Drought, yeah.
Hey, Conan's a dick. It's hard to feel sorry for the guy.
I like Conan's weird because, like, I'll agree with half of what he says, and then the other half is like,
yep,
I just shake my head at it. You know what I mean? And he's a little too honest for his own damn good at times. And, you know, I think it's also kind of slowly becoming like a gimmick as far as radio shows of him being like that. But, I mean, you know, people just, they believe their own hype. They live the gimmick.
I asked Brian one time, just point blank, I said, you know, you've had Conan on a few times. Is he completely full of crap? And Brian looked at me, he smiled, and he didn't say anything.
Man.
And
you know,
I didn't push the issue, you know?
You know, okay, so Craig, so what was it in particular? Because I feel like there's always a tipping point, right, where you hear one thing and you're just like, I'm out. So what was the statement that Conan made that you were like, I'm out. I'm out on this guy.
I don't, you know, it's been so long because I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't listened to anything he's done as of late. It was just the way he kept hyping up AAA and how they're going to do this and they're going to do that. And I'm like, quit talking about it. Be about it. You know what I mean? You've been talking about it for years. You've been talking about it for years, so, you know, Arthur, get off the pot. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's like, how many times have you learned that deals aren't final until they're final, but yet every few days that seemed to be, you know, it's almost, you know, like a TNA situation where it's like after, you know, the string of success we had in 1994, we're coming back to L.A., and it never happened. And Lucha Underground was supposed to be that. And Lucha Underground is not that. And Lucha Underground, I mean, with all honesty, right, it's a fun show, but it's not a real show that's going to have any kind of traction. It's not going to, you know, be the feature presentation of any kind of network. It encompasses a lot of the aspects of professional wrestling that, quite frankly, aren't really don't allow it to be big, right? I mean, it's a little too. It's fine, but it's not. It's not.
Yep.
It doesn't have the ingredients to become a giant professional wrestling promotion. And it's just interesting.
Agreed.
That, you know, AAA coming to America was supposed to be that, and that is not. And then now the life or death is that. And that is not even a presentation that I would, you know, really put my name behind, right? I mean, it's not really, it doesn't have the ingredients like to make it big time, in my opinion. But, you know, what do I know? And I just, how often does Conan get played for a sucker on some of these things? It's like, come on, you know? It's like when he first returned to AAA, it's like, oh, you know, I got the power and we're going to do great things. And then when the booking is still terrible and, oh, well, you know, I only have so much power. And it's very hard to take Conan seriously today, considering this track record. But, you know, you can build your reputation really quickly if you're any of these guys, right? You could be any number of guys and go onto a radio show and say things that the fans agree with. But then, luckily, podcasts have exposed a lot of these guys in a weekly format to say crap after crap after crap, where you kind of see, like, these guys aren't infallible, right? You know, these people were associated with bad acts, bad promotions, bad booking, bad everything, right? This is a Halloween-themed show, and just the acts that I heard you guys talk about, Papa Shango and aspects the Ultimate Warrior did with them, where the tar was run down. I mean, that was crap. You know, everyone who was associated with that should be ashamed, right? And I don't know. It's just it's funny. A lot of these people who were held in high regard, you know, they got – you know, they've been involved in bad things as well. It's going to happen if you have a 30-year career, you know. But and then you build your bona fides off criticizing today's bad product, you know, which today's bad product is pretty bad. But anyway, that's just my two cents.
Tony and I came off to me like he and a guy like Raven were kind of alike. You know, they thought that they were believing their hype a little bit too much and thought they were better
than
they were.
They think their shit don't stink. They think their shit don't stink.
They think that there's like they're so smart and stuff like that. That's how they come off to me as anyway.
Yeah.
And that feels like a version of like what Wrestle Society X was on MTV for like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like the same kind of product, you know, it's not your regular type of wrestling organization, more of a TV show. So
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're
right.
We
saw what that appealed to, right? That didn't even make it a full season, you know? I mean, we saw what type of people that appealed to, and, I mean, we've learned this lesson before, and, I mean, the fact that the company went through some issues before, you know, potentially putting on this season, they've announced dates, but never say never. And I don't know, man, it's just, you know, Conan, you know, he wants this reputation of being, you know, this super smart guy. He says smart things from time to time. But then again, you know, it looks like in a lot of these big deals, he gets played for a chop. You know, I mean, Lucha Underground was not what, at least initially, he thought it was going to be. And quite frankly, he shouldn't even open up his mouth about it, right? He shouldn't have said anything about it. He should have learned his lesson because he's been one of the guys saying AAA was coming back to America for 15, 20 years, you know? And you would talk to someone who was in the know about, you know, Lucha Libre, and they would tell you, you know, I'd speak to Dr. Lucha about it almost annually, like, hey, you know, AAA, come back to America. And he would be frank about it, like, you know, listen, there's always going to be people interested, you know, but at the end of the day, can you put together the right formula to make it happen? Not likely, you know, so it kind of is what it is. And before I leave, just real quick, you know, I saw someone online, someone I like, he had said that he wants the writer David Shoemaker to come Wrestling Observer. That'd be a bad idea. I'm not a fan of Mr. Shoemaker. So hopefully he stays away from Wrestling Observer and any other
website. You're talking about the mask guy, right? You're talking
about
the mask dude?
Man, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, see, not very interested in his work. So hopefully he doesn't.
He works in Joe Babinsack.
You know, does Babinsack post anymore on the front page?
I don't know. It's just something you read on the fucking board all the time. Babinsack this or Babinsack that. I don't know. You're just a thread on the board.
You know what? But big shout out to Chris Harrington, Mookie Ghana on getting that Hogan contract out there. You know, it's interesting. You know, some of these guys you meet, these meet and greets, you know. These meet and greets have a long history going back to the 80s of wrestling fans getting together with writers. And then, you know, there's people like Ed, you know. But then there's people like Mookie Ghana, you know, and Mookie Ghana is, like, blowing up. You know, he does quality work. So that's cool. You know, I'm happy to see people that, you know, it's the bottom.
I don't know
when
it's time to do anything else.
Work.
His work is so deep.
I know,
I think,
right?
He's like
absolutely.
I think he's like a Rain Man or something.
Yeah,
like stats are his life. Like he lives for stats.
Hey,
like
you
how many
words
do you go through a week to come up with this stuff? Sometimes, you know, Jesus. Somehow Chris he does amazing work. I'm just, you know, astounded sometimes.
I'm happy he exists. So thank you guys for having me on. Hope you guys have a happy and safe Halloween. And, Ed, be safe, man. Be safe.
Cool. So I take it you're just going to go as yourself tomorrow and scare all the little kids?
I'm going to go as Gabby Garcia. Were you offended when Tom Lawler basically said the same thing you said and Brian had no rebuttal?
Yeah. Pretty much. That's why I claim victory
like,
in the argument.
I was telling my wife, I was like, look at Ed. Ed had his information. He went to Brian, and he was right. And good for Ed. That's good for Ed. I'm happy Ed did that. It's like the first time ever.
It's actually happened many times, but.
Well, I don't remember any other time, but I'll take your word for it.
Dude, I'm always right. Halloween. I'm right about everything.
I'm sure your co-host will certainly have remarks to make about that statement.
Not saying nothing. I keep my mouth shut.
All right, guys. Well, that's good. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take it easy, Alex.
See you, man.
Bye.
Okay, now that Alex drew off off track like he always does when he calls in, we can get back to the Halloween aspect of the show. And me and Craig have brought up people. Katrina, why don't you bring up one of your favorite spooky or goofy or scary or just whatever?
Trying to think of one. I think obviously the best gimmick of all time is The Undertaker, right?
Sure.
I mean, not even just like a spooky one, but I think overall maybe the best gimmick of all time.
Yeah.
It's certainly lasted a long time, and usually stuff
was coming up on 25 years. I mean, November, Thanksgiving in 1990. You know, when he first came in, I mean, that's the kid.
What's funny about it is, okay, he started off as, the Master of Pain, kind of wearing
the Punisher.
You know, he was a big dude. He was athletic, but you never really thought nothing of him. Then they brought him in as a replacement to Sid Vicious in the Skyscrapers, and Sid Vicious had, you know, such a great look at that time, and it's like, who's this second-rate dude? And it brought the Skyscrapers down, and then he was just mean Mark Callis, this big ginger who basically lost to, like, Lex Luger and people like that, and just
I think it
was just there.
When he started, though, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he was good, but, I mean, he was bland. There was nothing, like, really there. Like, he hadn't figured it out yet or something. And then they took him to WWE, and then they unleashed the gimmick. And you look at the gimmick, and you're like, okay, it's one of these dudes. He's going to kill people for a month or two. He's going to fight Hulk Hogan. He'll get the heat on Hogan. Hogan will make his comeback win, and then we won't see this guy again, you know. Like all the other monsters that Hogan had to vanquish and defeat, like King Kong, Bundy, One Man Gang, shit like that, Kamala. And something happened where this odd and goofy and shouldn't have worked, and somehow it clicked, and he got over. And he got over so big as a heel that they ended up having to make him babyface, and I'm sure that was never really the plan. And ever since then, he was like another version of the Road Warriors as far as just being his badass heel, who was just so badass that you couldn't help but fucking get behind him and cheer him because he was so badass. And he just, you know, just he ran with it, and he carried that. I mean, yeah, he took the break as the American Badass for a while, but that was only a couple of years. Other than that, he's always been the Dead Man. And, you know, and no matter what they do, like they buried him, and he stuck and the grave got struck by lightning, and he stuck his hand out. And then he rose like an angel, you know, and flew away. And then he was throwing lightning, and him and Kane were throwing lightning at each other, and you know, shit like that. They crucified Steve Austin, you know, just all this wacky shit. But yet somehow he himself kept this. They could put him in the wackiest thing, but he kept the character so serious. And was so into it that it always worked. And he just, you know, you got to give him credit for just making it work. You know, the great, like you say, the greatest gimmick of all time. I mean, how many other gimmicks?
And I thought he would evolve his wrestling style over the years, going to like the MMA stuff, you know, to get away from some of the high-risk stuff, you know, just to change it up and to go a little bit longer. So,
you know, on paper, this gimmick should have failed. I mean, it should have been just like all the other stupid gimmicks that Vince came up with. And for some reason, that guy made it believable, and he made it work. And more power to him. I mean, it's been going for this many years. Yeah, good on him.
I want to talk about another kind of is more of a comedy figure than an actual scary guy, but I guess when they thought of the character and brought him in, he was supposed to be like a monster. And he was a heel for like a long time. And until he did have his big babyface run, and he's probably going to go down as one of the worst wrestlers of all time just because he never wrestled because of the gimmick. But George the Animal Steel, you know, one of the ugliest wrestlers. I mean, he always looked like he was like 50 or 60 years old, basically. Just ugly face. One of the hairiest wrestlers. I think Miguel Perez had more hair than him. But he just hair all over his fat body. You know, had no shame.
Did Mantel have more hair than him?
Yeah, this Mantel, too. He had way more hair on his chest than But, you know, he had the green tongue. And he didn't talk. I remember one time in the early 80s, when he was still a heel, they had him cut a promo to advertise one of the, you know how they would do the in-screens or whatever, and they'd promote to the local shows. And they wanted him to promote a Madison Square Garden, and it took him like 5 minutes to say Madison Square Garden because he had to do it by syllables. And which is, you know, he tore the turnbuckle, and then like, he's one of those, he's a monster, but it was hard to take him seriously because it was just such a joke. But then when he went babyface, he blew up, and everybody loved him when he went babyface. And he had the little stuffed animal and giving flowers to Elizabeth and stuff. But, yeah, what do you guys remember of George the Animal
Steel? It must
feel?
Have been very weird during that period because at the same time he was George the Animal Steel, he was a school teacher. So imagine that.
Yeah, that is actually
going to school and seeing him on TV, and then having him as your, as like your teacher at school or something like that. I got really tired of the whole Randy Savage George Steele thing after their 500th match on Saturday Night's Main Event.
Didn't George's sister marry Uncle Elmer or Butcher Vashon? Didn't she marry one of them?
I don't recall him having a sister that married somebody.
Well, don't you remember one of those? It was either Butcher Vashon or Uncle Elmer. They got married, and then the bride stuck out her tongue, and her tongue was green.
I don't remember that. No doubt that happened on TNT or something. Well, like movie
of course. Of course.
Well, you got the shot statement from Dr. Sigmund Ziff and could say, how now, brown cow?
Your thoughts, Craig, on George the Animal Steel?
He was always so wacky. He was like one of the guys that was on my TV when I first started watching wrestling. And who could forget the big angle between him and Elizabeth and the Macho Man he was just fun. You know, I never was freaked out by him or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was just fun-loving, I guess you could say. Not necessarily a monster. He was in the Oddities for a little bit, wasn't he? Didn't he come out with them?
He might have came out with them. They did bring out like different people to come out with them every once in a while.
I remember watching him. I watched him and always wondered, now why is everybody running people's heads into the turnbuckles? You know what's in there. You know, he ate the fucking thing. It can't hurt
right.
that bad. You know? Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was more disgusting looking than scary looking.
Yeah. He had a hell of a role in Ed Wood. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
Didn't he play Bela Lugosi?
No, he played Tor Johnson, who was a wrestler at that time, in Ed Wood with Johnny Depp. Still one of the best movies I've ever seen. So anybody hadn't seen that movie, you ought to check it out.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Because I remember the year he got, they did the Hall of Fame for a few years, like in the mid-90s. And the 94 WWE Hall of Fame, they had Bill Murray send in a video because talking about George, because he was in Ed Wood also. So.
Hmm.
Craig, you have any characters? Oh, go ahead.
One group that didn't really get mentioned and kind of forgot about, to be honest with you, the Brood. When they were around, Gangrel was a quote-unquote vampire, and then he brought in Edge and Christian, and just the whole entrance with the with them coming up from the floor in the around the in between the flames and all of that, they were money. They really
awesome.
Made
he did something. Song. He did something Santo couldn't do, and he made the puffy shirt cool.
That's very true.
Well, Gangrel and Edge look cool in their puffy shirts. Christian always looked kind of goofy in his.
Mm-hmm.
But the theme music was fucking awesome. It was perfect for the entrance. I mean, that's one of the greatest entrances ever. It's just that I think what killed that is the two sidekicks ended up being so much better than the main player. So that kind of killed Gangrel. And
they got away from that when they did those. Because that's when they first did the ladder match with the Hardys, the famous one.
Yeah.
The first one they did, and that kind of broke them away from him. So. And he was married a little bit of time for a long time.
Yeah, he was pretty much screwed after that. But, the Brood was awesome. I mean, just like I say, the entrance. It was all at the entrance, basically.
WrestleMania on the Hell in a Cell.
The what? I'm sorry.
Boss Man had the match, the Hell in a Cell match with the Undertaker at WrestleMania in '99. They hung him from the cell. Remember they did they had the noose around his neck and the cage went up.
That was cool.
You'd think after such a brush with death, he'd have more sympathy for the Big Show's dad, but he did.
Those dogs.
And he wouldn't have served his casket at the funeral.
Oh, the greatest videos I've ever seen was some guy made, like, some guy, this was years and years and years ago, but some guy basically spliced scenes from Pulp Fiction with scenes from Raw. And, you know how they do the scene where Christopher Walken is giving the kid the watch? So they're doing that, and then they show the angle where Boss Man breaks the Big Show's watch, and then they show the funeral, and Big Show jumps on the casket, and the Big Boss Man drives off, and they start playing the Dukes of Hazzard theme song as he's being pulled around the casket, and it's like the greatest fucking thing ever. I wish it would have got more played and stuck around, because that thing was a fucking amazing.
Then he fed Al Snow his own dog.
Yeah. Teppy. Poor Teppy. Was it Peppy or Pepper? It was Pepper.
Right? It was Pepper. Peppy was Charlo's hobby horse.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
We got put in the wood chipper.
Yeah, we got 6 minutes. Let me drop the plugs real quick. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. Check out AngryMarks.com. You can also download and stream our show at BlogTalkRadio.com. / Cotrera, and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can also get us on iTunes at keyword Angry Marks, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio.
And you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is my last name and the word jam, so proper jam. Follow me on Twitter there. I do a little bit of periscoping every Tuesday night, if you want to see some of the behind-the-scenes things in the Brian, Vinny, and Craig show. Got a lot of good response from that. People really enjoy actually seeing us. So if that's something you're into, then follow me on Periscope as well. Same name.
I was going to – let me add something to that, because when you brought that up, I was just thinking in my head, that's so stupid. It's so stupid. It's going to suck. And then – I saw one of them, and it was the one where Brian is ranting and raving about how he's taking off the Raw show for us, the viewers, but actually it's because he's lazy and he don't want to fucking review it again. But he's just rambling and fucking just spouting his shit, and then you move the camera to yourself, and you just gave the most the look on your face as you shook your head in disgust, kinda. And what Brian was talking about was like the greatest thing ever. So I highly recommend Craig's Periscope. You might get a moment like that, and it'll be totally worth it.
Thanks.
You can go to youtube.com/Petrero. I've got a bunch of stuff up there, so everybody check it out.
Okay, well, because that came up with Craig's Periscope, but yeah, we got to find something to bitch about Brian. But Craig, your thoughts on this whole? I mean, I actually like the theme show. I actually like that you do the Raw and the Nitro. I don't mind it at all. But like a lot of people got pissed off. But what really annoyed me wasn't the fact that people got pissed off. It's Brian's reasoning. It's redundant. Why would you want to hear? Well, not everybody listens to every show. There are some people who only listen to Dave's shows. There's some people who only listen to Brian's shows.
Right.
Not everyone's going to hear Filthy Tom talk about it or whatever. But it's because Brian is lazy and doesn't want to review it again. And it's all about that. I think that's what it is. I think he's just kind of like, kind of lazy about it and doesn't want to do it no more. And that's my opinion. What's your opinion then?
Or did not want to review the Raw shows anymore or something?
No,
they're
going to
do it on
Thursday,
Tuesday. I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if that was the case, why would he do it on Thursday then?
Because everyone got pissed off at him and told him he was full of shit.
He did
get a lot of responses. A lot of people were not happy about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I've got the brunt of it too, but it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I'm going to watch Raw no matter what, because that's what I do on Monday and what I do on Monday nights. I mean, if anything, I don't want to watch another hour of wrestling during the weekend so I can get caught up. So it doesn't really matter to me what we do. So I'm kind of the wrong guy to ask. I could really care less. I mean, the dude's paying me to watch wrestling and then talk about it. So, you know, if I have a big protest, then I won't be on the show anymore. You know what I mean? But it hasn't been a thing.
Well, like I say, I actually enjoy it. I have no problem with this change, but it was just his reasoning. Like, it was all about him, but he's trying to play it off like it's all about everyone else. That's what kind of was like. Made me shake my head about it.
Yeah, and honestly, Vinny is, you know, he's doing the whole football thing, and Monday nights are a bad night because there's also football on a Monday, and then he's just coming off on Sunday with, you know, all day of football. So I can see how the guy gets burned out and needs a couple extra days to catch up. You know, I get it.
Yeah. Well, see, if that would have been Brian's reasoning, that would, I think, gone over more because that you're making a good point because, Vinny is kind of, those are his busy days during this part of the year.
Yep.
But, you know, he didn't make it about that. He's like, he was doing it for us. When
he might have been covering for Vinny, too. I wasn't privy to any of that. I didn't even know, you know, what was going on until the day he sprung it on us. He's like, hey, we're not doing Raw. And that was the day that he had come back from the wedding, so I just figured he didn't have time to watch it or whatever. And then he dropped that bomb, like, okay, this is a thing now. Good.
Yeah, it would also help if he was more, like, you know, hands-on or like you say, you had no clue. Like, I mean, it doesn't really matter to you, but, like, let's say, you know what I mean? It's like, if it was a more professional job, you would like your job, your boss to inform you about changes that are going to happen and not just do it like the day of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I think I had 2 days notice, so I didn't really care, but there's been times where, oh, by the way, watch this, this, and this. I'm like, dude, I'm at work, and then I'm going to go pick up my son, I'm going to come home, I'm going to eat dinner, and then I might have, you know, a half hour to watch something, but if I don't, I'm sorry, but you need to give me a bigger, you know, bigger heads up than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, he doesn't, how do I say this? He doesn't have like a real life as far as having to go out and have a real job. And
agreed.
You know, he's always worked to his own schedule because of the way his business
yep.
works.
Yep.
But that's not reality.
I totally get
you know
that.
What I mean? Yeah, I mean, you have to work 40 hours a week to support your family.
Plus.
You know what I mean? And then have to take care of your family and everything that comes with life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He has no concept. He's going to be in such shock when that baby comes. That the
oh,
baby
yeah.
might be the downfall of the website because, you know what I mean? He's going to be a lot busier. I mean, he's always looking for shortcuts to make his life easier. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And the baby's
going
to be the total opposite of that. So.
Yep.
I wish Whitney would set up video cameras so she could just film him freaking out when the baby's crying late in the morning or
right.
he's trying to do a show and he's being all loud and obnoxious and waking the baby up. And you know what I mean?
Maybe he won't be so prone to have the ranting and raving when the baby comes.
Maybe not. Did,
or
Katrina,
could
you,
cause more ranting and raving.
Katrina, did you hear on the show, it was a couple of weeks ago, I told Brian, I texted him after he told Vinny and I, because I told him not to do that anymore, because there's been times where he has dropped news on me that has already been dropped on the podcast. It's like, you got to tell me up front, or otherwise, you know, what if I don't listen to the show? Mm-hmm. So he texts me the day before, and he goes, hey, I'm going to be a dad, this, that, and the other thing. And I texted him back, and I said, your world is going to change. And he's like, Craig, I have cats.
He has cats. That's equivalent.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
The cats know to poop in the litter box. The cats know to poop in a litter box. The baby's not.
Craig, I have cats. That was his comeback. It's like, wow, you are in such
a dream for a culture shock.
Yeah. Did
yeah.
I tell you he already threatened me about the baby?
No.
Okay, well, Whitney had posted some photos, and the photos were basically her and members of her family putting the crib together and making the room,
okay.
basically. So I posted, okay. I posted, of course, Brian's not around when real work's being done, right?
Right.
And so, I've posted way worse, you know?
Right.
So he doesn't respond on the Facebook thing. He sends me a text, and he said, don't be trolling baby pics or I'll kick your ass.
Huh.
And my response was, well, I'd be more scared of Whitney, but it's not a baby pic. The baby's not born yet. And basically what I said was true. Like, he was actually going to help build a crib. Like, he has any concept or idea
yeah.
on how to build a crib. I mean,
right.
I'm glad they didn't let him built the crib. I'm glad Whitney had her parents do it because that poor baby,
he
that crib was great.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So we're off our live air time, so we'll start to wrap up. But Craig, anything else you want to talk about before we go?
I just want to apologize for being gone last week and the week before. I had a memorial service for a nephew. It's a long story, but it was one of those things you could see coming. So, and then, believe it or not, my family was honored at a dinner because my mother and her family, actually my great-grandfather, actually came over to the Pacific Northwest from Norway and actually started one of the counties out here. It was could be Kitsap County, one of the founders, and I got roped into going to a big dinner, and they presented plaques and stuff like that. So it was kind of cool, but it was 4 hours. I'm never going to get back.
cool. By the way,
yeah.
did you hear about how I was viciously assaulted at the Shimmer tapings by Paige's mother?
I saw your tweet, and that's either the coolest or the most frightening thing I've ever heard.
It was both. It was actually both.
Okay.
It started the day before, because the day before she had her match, and she was walking by me, because I was front row kind of by one of the ring posts, and I was being brave for some reason, and I just put up my thumb and gave her the thumbs down, and she just stuck her fucking middle finger in my face. as she walked away. And I guess she remembered me because when they're brawling in the crowd and she's walking on the chairs on the second row, and then when she comes by me, she just swung her arm as hard as she could right in my ribs. And I felt it. And I was just like in total shock because it's like I'm thinking to myself, it would be the greatest thing if I ever got assaulted by her. And then for it to actually happen, that was cool as shit. But, yeah, I was that woman is the scariest woman who ever fucking lived. Yeah. I mean, as far as monster goes, Saraya Knight is a fucking monster because that old lady, and she's not really that old. She's only, like, in her late 40s. But, God, dude, her, what do you call it, like, she's like the Jake the Snake. She's like her president. She's like the Jake the Snake of women's wrestling. I mean, her psychology is just unmatched as far as women go. I mean, goddamn, she's scary. I mean, you think she's scary seeing her on the tape or a video or pay-per-view or something like that? No, be standing next to her while this lady is looking at you with a desk, and you will run.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Couture, anything you want to talk about before we go?
No, we talked about last week. I was just going to ask Craig if he saw the Star Wars trailer.
Oh, yeah. Many times. I think when it first came out, I probably watched it at least 5 times in a row online, you know, just to, did I miss anything? You know what I mean? I'm kind of a dork like that, but, anyway. Yeah, I can't wait, man. I'm so stoked for that movie.
I've been watching a bunch of those, trailer reaction videos people put up under the notes.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. And I went back and watched a bunch of them, like with Age of Ultron and Suicide Squad and Jurassic Park and stuff like that. I like watching stuff like that. I decided that my mom started watching, Ed, you know about this, my mom started watching Game of Thrones. So when she gets up to the Red Wedding episode, I'm going to film her reaction and put it on YouTube. Like all the others.
That'd be awesome. Now, speaking of Katrina, you're real good about finding shit on YouTube and shit like that. I got a mission for you. And hopefully you can do it before the Star Wars movie comes out. I need you to find the Star Wars Holiday Special. If it exists on social media, on like YouTube or whatever.
If you give me 1 second here, I will find it.
You can do this off the air, can't you?
Star Wars Holiday. Holiday.
Did you see that, Craig? You're a major Star Wars fan. Did you see the holiday special?
Years ago, obviously, but it's been
Star
a while.
Star Wars Holiday Special, 1 hour and 30 minutes. Full movie.
Also, do you guys, I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember. I mean, I was a kid when it happened, but do you remember when Donnie and Marie had the special Star Wars edition of the Donnie and Marie show? And they had R2 and C-3PO and a bunch of characters, and they did, like, a bunch of battles and stuff on the show, and it was awesome.
I don't remember that a bit.
I remember when they were on the Muppets.
Yeah, that was cool. But the Donnie and Marie, man, that was fucking awesome. And stuff. But,
Carrie Fisher sings. And Chewbacca's hold her up because she's all hopped up on coke.
Wait, what?
Where she sings a song, but Chewbacca has to hold her up because she's all on cocaine or something.
Oh, yeah, she did have a few issues back in the day after Star Wars. We'll go ahead and end the show because I'm sure Craig is just counting the seconds. Like, why aren't these fools ending the show yet? The show's over. So if you find a link, let me know, and I'll definitely check it out, and maybe we can review it next week on the show. But until then, everybody come back next week, and we will talk to you then. And, of course, I can't. Oh, here it is.
Oh, hello, darling. You caught me working on my biggest project ever. For my favorite wrestling event, Halloween Havoc 91. And this year, Guam, Elvira, is building a chamber of horrors.
She's in heaps of craze and amazing. Who can survive in a race against time?
At Halloween Havoc, anything can happen.
Halloween Havoc 91, Chamber of Horrors. Live Sunday, October 27th, only on pay-per-view.